Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Cavalytics, a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I'm going to go through the spiel here. We're available on both SoundCloud and iTunes, and we would appreciate likes and good ratings there if you enjoy what we're doing. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. We read everything we receive those places, and we love to hear from you guys. I've got my co-host here, Arnav. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going well. How about you?
Well, it's going okay. The Cavs just lost to the Brooklyn Nets, who are the fourth worst team in the NBA by SRS.
Yeah, that was not a good game.
They lost by 9. The game was a little bit closer than that final score indicates. The Cavs were actually up going into the fourth quarter.
I think Brooklyn is like 4-45 or something when they're going down.
When they're losing going into the fourth, yeah, makes sense. Yeah, the Nets are not a good team. Also they've traded Joe Johnson, so if anything, they're worse than their sort of SRS implies. The Cavs were on the second night of a back-to-back, and the Cavs did have to go all out last night to win, so that's a somewhat mitigating factor. But James, Love, or everyone played, so. Yeah, this feels like a really disappointing loss.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely. I mean, like you said, they were in the second night of a back-to-back. But those games happen all the time in the NBA, and good teams can usually find a way to win.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you play back-to-backs, I mean, what more of a gift can you hope than for the Brooklyn Nets? Right. They're atrocious.
Right. Exactly. And even like going into the game, the Cavs had an 82% chance by like 538 and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's including the back-to-back factor.
Right.
And the away factor.
Yeah. The game did have some sort of interesting aspects to it. LeBron started 10 of 10, is that right?
Yeah, he was 10 of 10, and then like Mozgov took the ball out of his hand on it.
Yeah, there was a missed shot by somebody, and LeBron appeared to be attempting a rebound and reverse dunk putback. But Mozgov also kind of grabbed it and appeared to interfere with it. I'm not sure that was going to go in, even if Mozgov didn't.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either. But yeah, at least there was someone there.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, okay. So then he was 10 of 11, and he finished 13 of 16.
He had an 83 true shooting percentage.
That's not bad. That's probably amongst his top 20 of all time.
I think lower, actually. Yes, I remember looking at it last time, and he had a lot of them bunched around 87, 88, 90.
Right. He had a game this year where he set the record for highest true shooting
percentage in a single game. Yeah, above 20 points, yeah. Yeah, he did. It was a 94-something, I think.
Huh.
And at a point in this game, he was at 93.75 or something. But then he missed two in a row towards the end.
Yeah, well, I mean... Yeah, when you're talking about setting records for true shooting percentage, missing a single shot basically
makes a difference.
Yeah. And he missed three. So it was interesting. The Cavs were actually up by two when he came back in with about 5 minutes left in the fourth. I did actually want to mention this. So LeBron played, quote-unquote, only 35 minutes tonight. Typically, when games are close, he'll come back in with 7 or 8 minutes left in the fourth. And the Cavs are, you know, Coach Lou didn't bring him back in until there were about 5 minutes left, and I was thrilled with that. The Cavs were up 2 when they brought him back anyway. They just couldn't get it done at the end. But, you know, Coach Lou said that they're going to prioritize rest over winning going forward, so if sparing LeBron 2 minutes on the second end of a back-to-back is the best we can get, I guess that's what we're going to have to take. But, yeah, I am pleased that they didn't run him out there for 39 minutes like they might have.
Yeah. Other things to note, I think Dellavedova only got 16 minutes. He wasn't pretty good. He wasn't that good either. But it's weird because his shot attempts were really low. He usually gets more than two shots or three shots in a game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we haven't really mentioned this yet. But yeah, Kevin Love and Irving were terrible on offense again. So Irving was 6 of 22. Love was 5 of 14. Brutal.
Yeah, it was bad. He did have 12 rebounds. Yeah, Love had 12 rebounds.
Yep.
And then Irving had 4 assists. Yeah, no turnovers, though, so that's good.
No turnovers for Kyrie, yeah.
Which is Which is a good sign given his recent increase in turnovers.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a disappointing
if
game
you're,
overall.
If you're
There's
looking for silver linings,
besides
I guess
LeBron,
that's, yeah.
not much positive.
Yeah.
Channing
So,
Frye didn't shoot well at all.
yeah, that's right. So he was 0 for 5 last night, and he was 1 for 7 today. All five of his attempts last night were threes. Six of his seven shots today were threes. He made one of the threes today. But yeah, he's 1 for his last 11 from three. Not great, although I expect we talked about this on a previous podcast. Like he was true shooting like 70% as a Cav. It's probably still over 60, which is still outstanding. But
Yeah, it's still over like 65 right now, so it's
yeah,
still fine, but
I think I
I
mentioned at the
mean
time we can't reasonably expect him to hang around 70% true shooting forever. So this is sort of natural, but it's still disappointing that it's happening so fast.
I think reasonable people expected it to come down, but there were some people on the subreddit who kept thinking that just because he was getting open shots, he'll keep shooting that percentage.
Right, yeah, 20 shots is definitely a reasonable sample size for making judgments for going forward.
Yeah,
Hopefully,
exactly.
my sarcasm is obvious there.
I don't know. I picked it up.
Yeah.
Iman Shumpert made it three. That was great to see.
He did.
He made it.
Yeah, this box score is sort of odd. The Cavs were 10 of 38 from three. And I'm looking at the shot chart as well. The Cavs did a good job, like, producing a shot chart that looks like modern NBA thinking shot charts are supposed to look like. Like everything is, you know, right under the hoop or outside the 3-point line. I'm sort of just eyeballing it here. It looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 shots, maybe 11, were not in the paint or behind the 3-point line. So, you know,
That's
they're.
pretty solid, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that implies that at least I don't know if it's Tyronn Lue or if it's, you know, somebody else on the coaching staff or if it's just the players sort of figuring it out over time, but it is good that they're, you know, basically taking layups or threes. Like that's what they should be doing.
I think what happened in this game, at least from the eye, was that they were hoping that they could just win this game by shooting jump shots most of the time, at least in the fourth quarter once it got there. And when they finally realized that their jump shots weren't going in, they were too tired to actually drive to the basket.
Yeah, that seems
At least on
reasonable.
offense. But they were terrible defensively too, which and obviously there's no excuse for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Cavs just have to move on from this one. I think they play the Knicks on Saturday, so they'll get.
It's another freebie. Well,
Yeah,
quote
should be.
unquote freebie.
Should be.
Didn't the Knicks win against the Bulls tonight?
I'm not sure.
Actually, I want to discuss this. So,
Go ahead.
who do you think would be an ideal playoff opponent for the Cavs in the Eastern Conference? Like, what would you want the sequence to be for the first, second, and third round?
Right. So there's a bunch of people sort of hanging out, you know, around that eight seed. And the Cavs are no sure thing for the one seed, but yeah, for the sake of this discussion, let's say they are.
Yeah, so 538 has the Cavs at like 90% to get the one seed.
Yeah, but
So let's just
they're not
assume. Yeah, I
including
mean,
tonight's loss to the Brooklyn Nets.
no, you're right, but
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll spike to like 30% after tonight's loss, don't you?
go down to
No,
30%.
You were saying, oh, sorry. You said they have a 70% chance?
No, they had a 90%
Oh,
chance
okay,
going
yeah.
in.
Okay, I think that will go down to like 60 or 65.
That much? I don't
Well,
know. The thing is, with every game, because
before they were, I mean,
the
this
Raptors
half,
lost yesterday.
yeah, they did. But this halves
Anyway.
their lead. So they had a 2-game lead over Toronto. Now they have a 1-game lead.
No, it was
But
2.5 before, but now it's two. So it's still
right.
2-game lead right now.
It's 1 game in the loss column.
Oh, in the last column, you're right about
Yeah.
that, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, all right. So the Cavs will be the one or the two seed. The people hanging around the eight seed are the Pacers, the Pistons, the Bulls,
And
and
the
with
Wizards.
yeah, I mean the Wizards. I don't
They
think
have
the
a
Wizards
very
are going to get in.
low chance of making it. I think it's going to be Pacers or Pistons or maybe Bulls, but even the Bulls after tonight's loss only have like a 10% chance
Yeah.
to make it.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this off air. I actually would prefer the Bulls, and then probably the Pacers, and then the Pistons. But yeah, I think that's probably right.
Is that more of a matchup thing, or is it just because you want to beat the Bulls? Because.
Yeah, well, yeah. So my parents live in Chicago, so when the Cavs play the Bulls, I normally go home and try to catch a couple games. But setting that aside, I just don't think the Bulls are very good. I mean, their differential on the season is negative 1.4. I don't know what their SRS is, but the Pacers are positive 1.5. The Pistons are positive 0.8. But yeah, the Bulls' differential is like largely influenced by their good play early in the season. Like they have been really bad lately, and I think I think they're a worse team than even that negative 1.4 reflects. Do you have a reason to disagree with that?
Yeah, injuries is the only caveat, I think, to that point. It's
Yeah.
not like they've been great when they've been healthy either,
Right.
but they've been extremely injured since basically since their first month.
Right.
Like Jimmy Butler missed like 10 games in a row.
Right.
Miritich missed a ton of games, and then Pau Gasol has missed a ton of games.
Right, and Noah's done for the year.
Noah's done for the year now, which obviously he won't come to the playoffs either. But I
Right.
think there's a chance that, I don't know, on the offhand that, everyone's healthy going into the playoffs, then I think their effective SRS would be higher than what their current
Yeah,
SRS
you
is.
may be right. I forgot about Butler missing that handful of games, so that's
Even now,
definitely.
he's in back, like he's playing, but he looks terrible because of the injury. Like he's playing through some stuff that's
Yeah.
been reported at least.
Yeah. The Bulls are, yeah, I mean, reasons to be scared of the Bulls is like, look, it took us six games to get past them last year, and that was without Pau Gasol playing in games five and six. Did he play game four? I can't remember.
He played six. He didn't play four and
Okay.
five.
Okay. Sorry.
He
Yeah,
came
so
back
that
for
was without
Boston.
Gasol for four and five, and yeah, hobbled in six. And, the Bulls always seem to play the Cavs tough. It could be sort of a chippy series. There's some reasons to want to avoid it for that reason. But on the other hand, I mean, look, the Cavs need to. I mean, at some point, they need to start playing better and, like, beat teams that they should beat. And really, it shouldn't matter. But,
Yeah,
yeah, and,
I think that's a good point.
the Bulls might. I don't know. I guess I don't know. So, who do you prefer?
I would prefer the Pistons mostly because I want an easy first round. Because these guys, yeah, I want them to go 4-0 in the first round so they can develop some momentum going into the second round.
You think that's more probable than you think a sweep is more probable against the Pistons
Pistons?
than the
I
Bulls.
do. I
Yeah.
do.
I
I
don't
think we
know.
can just hack Drummond the entire series
Yeah,
and.
I mean, I think we've talked about it a bit on the podcast, or I can't remember. But yeah, I don't understand why teams don't just put Andre Drummond on the line every time down. Like,
What's his free throw shooting right now? I think he was 38% at some point. Let's see. Oh.
I'm looking it up right now. It's 35.9 this year.
Wow.
So,
Yeah, I mean, you could just literally hack him every single.
yeah, I mean, there's some risk of giving up a offensive rebound when he misses the second.
Because he's the best offensive rebounder we've
Right.
seen it in several years, in several
Right.
decades, actually. But yeah.
Right. But remember, he's behind the free throw line to start there, so it's tricky. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm sure their offensive rebounding on Drummond missed free throws is better than the average, but. Nevertheless, like, just by simple math, like a 36% free throw percentage means that they have an expected value of 0.72 points per possession, and that is a lot lower than one, which is, sort of where most teams sort of hang around.
Exactly.
So you got to worry about giving up that offensive rebound, but you don't have to offensive rebound the first one. You're only offensive rebounding the second, and yeah, I mean it's. Whatever. I've wanted to dig into the math on this for a while. Maybe we will, and maybe we can present that at some point. But yeah, I don't. Yeah, it seems like hacking Drummond could work. Reggie Jackson's not bad.
He's pretty good. I think KCP, one of their
KCP
guys,
is
is really
pretty
good.
good. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really worried. I think we can easily sweep them if we play them. Especially like, in the fourth quarter, if even if the Cavs are down like five, they'll just start hacking him, man. I think they'll be fine.
Right.
So if without looking, what would you guess his true shooting percentages, Drummond's?
Drummond's? Well, I mean, I know it's high because all he does is dunk. I would guess 65.
That is so off.
Too high,
50,
really?
50, 50.
Really?
Because of the free throws and because he's
Well,
kind of overrated on
look,
the inside.
DeAndre Jordan can't make free throws either, but his is
You're
like
absolutely
insane.
right.
Yeah, I for some reason I had Drummond sorted into the same category as as
See,
Jordan?
I think that that's what most people think. He isn't as dominant as people think he is because he's not efficient at all. He's not an efficient scorer.
Yeah, I'm just going to pull this up right now. Do you know what his RPM is? It must be sort of underwhelming.
Yeah, it wasn't that good in last. Let me check.
He is. Who am I looking up? Drummond. Okay, well, he's eighth in the league, but yeah,
Like ORPM is negative, right?
his ORPM is negative,
Which
which
makes
is
sense because
pretty
of the low.
tricky.
His
Yeah.
DRPM, I think the thing with the height is a factor, but also these centers, they change the way you play the game so much.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed, like even if Dwight Howard isn't, rebounding well or scoring well, just by his mere presence, the game changes so much. I mean, they have so
Right.
much, what would you call it? I guess anti-gravity or something, just pushing people away from the basket.
Yeah, to is it Kirk Goldsberry who came up with that gravity concept? I can't remember who it was, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anti-gravity would be like sort of the opposite on the defensive end.
Right. I think actually Andrew Bogut is a good example of that because even though the Warriors are best, when Draymond is at center, Andrew Bogut is still a really, really good player because of what he does on the defensive end.
Yeah, I think Bogut is now the best defensive RPM player in the game. He recently passed Tim Duncan.
Yeah, you're right. He is 5.99
Yeah,
now.
pretty impressive. But that can be mitigated if, like last year, they never play Andrew Bogut against the Cavs. But in any case, okay. So back to the question: Paul George and the Pacers don't scare you at all?
They do a little bit. I think they scare me more than Pistons do,
Yeah.
but not really that much. I think Monte Ellis is really overridden. Paul George is a good player, but he's pretty inconsistent. He hasn't been that good since his hot start.
Boy, his first half was incredible.
I mean, he was like maybe a one notch below Steph Curry. He was that
Yeah,
good.
he was. He was just, yeah,
He
he
was
was
better than
outstanding.
LeBron during that first half.
He was. But yeah, he's since faded. Maybe it's fatigue or so, who knows? Okay, all right, so first round, we prefer, or you
Well,
prefer
I
the
prefer
Pistons,
Pistons. You
I prefer
prefer
the
the Bulls.
Bulls. It
What about
looks
second
like it's
round?
gonna be the Pistons. I mean, I'm just looking at it now. Chicago's a game back in the loss column, but they're two back in
Did
the
the
win
Pacers win
column,
today?
so.
Oh, the Pacers won today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance it's going to be the Pistons or even the Pacers. They're only one back in the loss column.
Yeah. Well,
And Chicago lost tonight.
the Pacers could be the seventh seed. We'll have to see.
And then Chicago lost tonight, so they're even one lower now.
Yeah, they're in trouble. Okay, so then the second round, it looks like it would probably be either Boston or Miami, or Charlotte, depending on
Who do you
how
face
this.
in the second round? It's the winner of the fourth and fifth. No, of the. Yeah, sorry, what's the second round?
Yeah, you
In the second.
play.
Fourth and fifth, right? Yeah.
It gets reseeded, I believe, after the first round. I think the first round, there's some sort of division consideration. Actually, no, wait, didn't they change it this year? There used to be division
Yeah.
consideration, but there
There's
is
no
not
division
anymore. Okay,
consideration
all
now.
right, yeah, so then we would just play the winner. Assuming we're the
Oh,
one seed, we would play the winner of the 4-5
fourth
game.
and fifth, yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be right now, Celtics or the Heat. I don't know about you, I would rather play the Celtics.
Is that because you live in Boston?
Sure. Well, I don't really care about that. I think we match up better with the Celtics. Maybe there's some mental component to the
Yeah,
Heat
I feel like
as well.
have we lost to the Celtics this year?
Once, and it was on that weird game winner where we were up five with
Oh,
like
right,
20 seconds to go.
Isaiah Thomas, right?
No, it was Avery Bradley or
Oh, he was Avery Bla Bradley. It
Avery
was Avery
Bradley, yeah.
Bradley. Yeah, you're right.
But we're like 2-1 against them. We were 4-0 last year, and then we like blew them out several times in the regular season last year.
Right. Well, yeah, and look, there are like 20 reasons not to play the Heat, right? Like, first off, Chris Bosh could play,
Yeah, if he comes back, then did they
and
even improve?
that's then they're even better. And then there's like the whole weirdness with Miami, obviously. We don't need to get into that,
Yeah.
but I'm sure most listeners understand that that could be a little bit awkward for LeBron James, and it'd be better to keep that out of his head, in my opinion. And yeah, I think beating Boston would just be easier. I think Miami has been playing pretty well lately. Like they finally figured out how to integrate Whiteside so that he can start generating positive RPM. And yeah, Joe Johnson's been a good addition for them. Wade's been playing well. They're good. They're a good team.
Yeah, the thing is this third, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth seeds are bunched together right now. They all have 42 and 30 or 41 and 30.
Yeah, I mean,
It could be any of them,
Boston,
basically.
or sorry, Atlanta is the 3 seed, which is sort of surprising, but they could easily fall back to like the 6th seed. So, yeah, there's still a
Exactly.
lot of basketball left to be played here. But yeah, I guess of all those teams, I would like to play Chicago the most. I think they would be the easiest. Then Detroit, Indiana, and then I'm sort of agnostic between Boston, Charlotte, and Atlanta. Not agnostic. Yeah, agnostic. Yeah. I'm indifferent. Like I don't care
Right.
between those three. And then Miami, and then I really do not want to face Toronto, but we're gonna have to probably in the Eastern Conference Finals. And
That'll be
that's
fun.
well, it'll be fun if we win.
I mean, either way, like I think you brought this up before. I mean, if we can beat the Raptors, I'd rather lose before getting to the finals.
Yeah, it's sort of an existential question as a fan, right? Like, for me, the playoffs are a really stressful time in my life. Like, I have to sort of rearrange my work schedule. So I live on the West Coast, and I have to rearrange my work schedule so that I can catch every game live. During the regular season, I TiVo a lot of games and watch them delayed, but during the playoffs, I kind of refuse to do that. Sometimes I'll fly to whatever city that, the Cavs are playing, and I'll watch the games. It's just like a big stressful thing in my life, and last year was tough. Like losing in the finals is rough. I remember, didn't somebody ask LeBron like right after the finals ended? I think in his post-game press conference,
Yeah,
they were like,
I was right then, yeah. Would you
would you
rather
rather
lose?
lose in the first round or not make the playoffs or make it to the finals? And I don't remember exactly what he said, but the emotion around it was, that's a good question.
No, he said exactly. He said I had to think about it.
Yeah, like, coming this far is so much work and so much effort, and it makes the disappointment so profound. And look,
And
I'm
then
like,
every year, right? Like he's getting older and older too, right? Like I think if he's not gonna win the finals, then he might as well preserve his body so he can improve, or so he can elongate his career.
Yeah, like playing an extra 25 games in the playoffs just to lose is just, well, anyway, that Toronto series will be hard fought, and unlike the series that I anticipate the finals, unlike what I anticipate the finals looking like, should we make it, I think the Eastern Conference Finals could be like a really interesting series in that it'll be close.
I think both conference finals series will be pretty close, right? Cavs Toronto should be fun, and then Spurs Warriors will be fun too, I think.
Yeah, even if it is, even if the Thunder sneak in there, it would still be good. I don't think that'll happen, but any of those three teams would make good finals opponents for each other, or good conference finals opponents for each other. Okay, so you spent some time on Twitter today. You posted something about David Blatt. Do you want to sort of go through what
David
you said there?
Griffin.
David Griffin, sorry. Cavs GM
Yeah,
David Griffin, go
so
ahead.
I figured we would kind of grade all the moves and acquisitions he's made. So I think I posted something on there, and I may have not phrased it properly. I wasn't trying to say that everything that David Griffin's has done has been excellent. He has had his ups and downs, and I was merely trying to say that the midseason trades that he's made have been excellent.
Yeah, I thought you phrased it fine. It's just that it's yeah, depending on how you read it, some people
Right.
seem to think that you were saying that Griffin should be executive of the year, which I don't think either of us believe. But let's go through it. So he let's see here. So he was named interim GM when Chris Grant was fired. And I think Chris Grant was fired in February of 2014, and he was, I don't know, they had like some sort of ceremony when he was made permanent GM, but so he's basically been in charge since February of 2014.
Right.
And his first move was he traded Earl Clark and Henry Sims, who were two sort of also-rans, as well as two 2014 second rounders to the Sixers for Spencer Hawes. And I don't know if you were following the Cavs closely at this point. So this is pre-LeBron.
Yeah, I know.
This
I was
was,
following them, but not as closely, obviously.
yeah. So they, Hawes was an upcoming free agent, and the Cavs sort of wanted to make a little run for the playoffs there. Like they were playing okay. Hawes was actually a fairly good center at that point, and they went for it. And anyway, Hawes left in free agency, but Earl Clark and Henry Sims never really amounted to anything, and second round picks never do, although they are a currency. But they were 2014 second rounders, so it would have had to have been some other trade if they were going to use them. So, and they didn't.
Right.
So, anyway, that move doesn't matter.
Kind of a wash move, I would say.
Yeah, his
and
first.
Actually, just an interesting thing. Henry Simmons was in the game today. I think he plays for the Nets now.
Really?
Yeah, I think he was
I
in the game.
I did not notice that. I think Earl Clark was on the Lakers for a while. I can't remember. He was on the Lakers, but he was on the
yeah,
Lakers.
Yeah, Simmons was, he played 16 minutes. He was 1 of 5 from the field. Anyway.
Well, future Hall of Famer Henry Simmons was lost in that deal. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that trade matters. I think it's not consequential in any way. But yeah,
mostly a wash.
Yeah. His first big move was on May 12th, he fired Mike Brown, and on June 20th, he hired David Blatt.
I think that was a good move. I think most would say hiring Blatt, especially when you didn't have LeBron coming in.
Right.
To coach the young ones
I
was
loved
an excellent
that.
Move.
At the time that move was made, I absolutely loved it. I mean, at that time, there were already some rumors about LeBron, but they were I don't know, they were not strong rumors. They were mild rumors.
I mean, clearly, even the team didn't know, so there's no way nobody else knew. Right?
Right. So, yeah, when you color it that way, like, yeah, getting David Blatt was an outstanding hire, and he was, well, yeah, we'll get into him maybe when we talk about when he got fired. So his next move was he drafted Andrew Wiggins with the first pick and Joe Harris with their first pick of the second round in the 2014 NBA draft. And then he made a series of complicated and sort of uninteresting moves. They traded Alonzo Gee to the Bobcats for Brendan Haywood and Dwight Powell. They made this bizarre three-team trade where they traded Jarrett Jack and Sergei Karasev to the Nets. And they also traded... Look, basically, they needed to free up
They were clearing cap space, yeah.
They had to free up space to sign LeBron James to the max. Even if you thought, like, okay, even if one of the players they traded away, like, for example, Tyler Zeller is decent, even if you were, you know, like, well, you know, maybe you could have given up less. Look, the Cavs had a small window to operate to create that cap space, and, like, you know.
You take it every single time
LeBron. Yeah, you make the space, and even if you think it's 50-50 to get LeBron, you do it, and they did, and they got him. So I'm not really going to rate him on those trades. And none of the guys have really turned into anything anyway, so it's sort of moot.
On the other hand, obviously we can't give him... Like, obviously signing LeBron James is A++, but we can't really give him all the credit for signing LeBron, right? Because the fact that he was born here doesn't really help David Griffin's...
Yeah, I mean,
he was born like 30 minutes away from there, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know exactly how it went down, but, you know, presumably, we know LeBron talked to the Cavs owner. The Quicken Loans?
Dan Gilbert.
What's his name? Dan Gilbert. Comic Sans. We know that they met before, and, you know, LeBron sort of presumably talked to him about, you know, how things ended in Cleveland the first time, and, you know, Gilbert said, I'm sorry. But maybe Griffin was there. But yeah, to the extent that, like, there was something that Griffin had to do right to get LeBron, he did it, and we got him. So, look, I'm not going to give him too many points for that, but I'm certainly not taking points away. Like, he...
Yeah, I mean, happen. I think... And then he cleared cap space and time, which I think is a solid thing. So, yeah, I think he gets, like, a B, at least an A on that.
Yeah. It's sort of like it's like A on a homework assignment, right? It's not the midterm or the final, but yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, you did well.
He did what he was supposed to do, and he did it well. He did it in time, yeah.
Right, okay. All right, so then was...
Actually, what do you think about the Wiggins pick? I think it was pretty unanimous at the time, right?
Yeah. It was definitely... Okay, my recollection is that it was completely unanimous. I mean...
Wasn't there Jabari Parker?
Who went to Jabari Parker, right? Yeah.
And then Embiid was injured, so that's why they didn't pick him.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs were going to draft him. Oh, well, maybe we should talk about this. So remember, the Cavs were going to draft Embiid.
And then he got injured, right?
The rumors were that they were going to draft Embiid. No, he didn't get injured. He was injured. It's just that nobody else knew it until the Cavs doctors discovered it in his physical.
Oh,
did
okay.
Did you know that?
Yeah. No, I didn't know that.
The Cavs are the one that blew the whistle on his back injury. Like, he had like a knee or a foot injury, but the Cavs discovered he had a back injury as well. And then that was it for Embiid. So, I mean, I don't know how much Griffin has to do with that, but, you know, I think he's in charge of team operations, at least to some extent. So, in any case, yeah, Wiggins was the right pick. And then, of course, and, you know, I don't know if we'll ever know this, but, yeah, the Cavs traded Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett, but Bennett was not Grant's pick.
He was just the filler.
Right. bizarre that a player picked first overall the year before was filler, but yeah, he was just filler. They traded him, Anthony Bennett and Andrew Wiggins, to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Kevin Love. It was actually a three-team trade, but that's who the Cavs lost, and that's who they got.
Right.
And I think there are some people with whom you could argue that the jury is still out there. It is not out for me. Wiggins is not very good. And Love is one of the top 20 players in the NBA by RPM. You could argue about the effectiveness of RPM, but you know, I would not accept an argument that he's not in the top 30 players. And Wiggins just...
It's not even the top, I would say, 100 right now.
I am going to go through it here, but he's not on the first page. He is not on the second page. This might take a while at this rate.
I think you can just go through the small forwards.
Yeah, to figure out what it is, and then he's not on the third page. This is making for a great podcast. He's not on the fourth page. I'm already to the 160th player. Yeah, whatever. All right, so he's not in the top 200 players in the NBA by RPM. Like, that's a big problem.
That's a huge problem. Yeah, anyway, he's in very good right now. Obviously, that doesn't mean he's a bust or anything. He has huge potential. He's only, what, 20 years old?
I think he might be older than that now. I think he's 21. But, yeah, I mean, look, if he were on the Cavs this year, the Cavs would be a substantially worse team.
Worse, exactly.
He is the 314th best player in the NBA by RPM, and he is 21. And he actually turned 21 on February 23rd. I enjoy watching Wiggins play. Like, I think he has a bunch of upside. Like, will he develop into an NBA All-Star? Probably, but I don't think he's ever going to get to Love's level, and...
Certainly not in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is basically our window because of LeBron.
Right. Okay. All right. So we like that trade. And then nothing for a while. The Cavs started the season. The season was a disaster. The Cavs started, I think, 19-20 last season. LeBron had his sabbatical of 2 weeks. And things were looking bad. And then Griffin pulled the trigger on two moves. They're often reported as one move, but I want to separate them.
They were separate, yeah.
I want to separate them as two moves here, and Arnav, you know why, but we'll get into it in a second. So the first trade was a three-team trade. The Cavs traded Dion Waiters to the Thunder, and they traded Lou Amundson and Alex Kirk to the Knicks, as well as a 2019 second rounder. So I'm sure the Knicks are waiting with bated breath for that one. And in return, the Cavs got Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith. They also got the 2015 first round pick of the Thunder. Now, the Thunder were good last year. That pick was fairly late, but I think it was like mid-20s. I don't think it was late 20s.
The Thunder? They were in the lottery
last year.
Yeah, because they didn't make the playoffs because he was injured. Durant was injured, remember?
Yeah, I'm completely forgetting that. Yeah, wow. Okay, so yeah.
But it was top 18 protected, so we wouldn't.
Right, okay. All right, so that still has not transferred. Okay, all right.
Well, we already sent that pick, by the way. I think you'll mention it in the Mozgov trade, but yeah.
Right. Okay, so that was trade one. So they traded Dion Waiters, and they got back J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, and a first-round pick. They also traded Lou Amundson and Alex Kirk, but Amundson's still in the NBA. I think Kirk is out of the NBA. Yeah. So that was like an outstanding
trade. That's a home run trade, I think.
I mean, that is a home run trade. Everyone knows what Shumpert and Smith have meant to the Cavs. Both of them are better than Dion Waiters alone. They also got a first-round pick back. So, I mean, that's just...
That's
a grand slam.
I think A-plus there.
That is like one of the... just going over his transactions, that is by far his best transaction. I would give that an A-plus. And that's like a midterm. Unfortunately, right. I've hinted at what I'm going to say about the Mozgov trade by saying unfortunately there, but okay. 2 days later, he traded two first-round picks. One of the picks is the Oklahoma City pick, which, as you mentioned, is top 18 protected in 2015, and it's top 15 protected afterwards. And the other pick is a pick that the Cavs had gotten from Memphis. And there's some complicated protection rules there. Has it been conveyed yet? Do you know? And so it would have been conveyed if it was between 6-14 and 2015. I don't think so. The Grizzlies were good last year. They made the
Yeah,
playoffs.
they were in the playoffs,
Okay.
so.
The other pick is, and is conveyed if between 6-14 or 2016. Okay, and it's also 6-14 protected in 2016.
I'm
So
pretty
the
sure we traded that one for Channing Frye recently.
No. We traded this one away. We had Memphis's.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about the Memphis one. Never
Yeah,
mind.
yeah, yeah.
Sorry. I think we
Okay.
traded someone else, some other pick. I think we traded our own for Channing Frye, but we'll get there
Yeah,
later.
we'll get to that. Yeah, so this Memphis pick was it w is protected between 6-14 last year and this year. So it'll probably not get conveyed this year either because Memphis is mediocre but not going to make the playoffs. Actually, they might make the playoffs, right? What's going on with Memphis? Yeah, Memphis is going to make the playoffs. So I think this actually
They're
will
going to make
get
the playoffs, yeah.
this might get transferred this year. But in any case, it's going to be a mid first rounder. And that has some value.
That does have some value, depending on who
That has some value. So,
who's drafting. What's I think how many win shares do they give? I think it's like two or three if he once you get that far in
yeah, I think so
on
too.
average.
But okay, so my big complaint about this Mozgov trade. So the Mozgov trade is typically lauded by Cavs fans as a great move. I think that the Nuggets wanted to get rid of Mozgov, and if the Cavs would have waited 2 more weeks, they could have given up just one of the first round picks. Now that I'm looking at this, they probably would have had to give up that Memphis pick. The Oklahoma City pick is not likely to be as high. And so I'm not as worked up about this as I used to be. But in any case, first picks are always assets. And holding on to that second first round pick, even though it would have likely been a late pick, I think was a bit of a blunder on Griffin's part. I know why he did it. He felt like the Cavs were reeling. They were reeling. And, trading for Mozgov could, help to turn things around, and it did. But I have an issue with the timing of it. I think the Nuggets were waiting for the Cavs to blink, and they did. What do you
Yeah,
think?
I think there are a couple of layers to this question, right? So one thing is that Mozgov hasn't been good this season at all. So if he was as good as he was last year, then I think that maybe that would have been a positive for the trade. But he
Yeah,
has not been
agreed.
that good at all. He's been
Agreed.
terrible this season. I think
Right.
most would agree with that.
I would go a step further than that. Having Mozgov on the team, I think, has taken wins away from the Cavs because I think it's taken minutes
They
away
keep trying to.
from Tristan Thompson
And
and
Fry,
more
yeah.
recently Channing Frye. But in the main, for most of the season, I think Thompson would have been 5 more minutes per game, and I think that's more valuable than Mozgov's 15 or so. So, in any case, all right, continue.
That said, he did save our season last year because he was excellent in the second half. So I think we
Right.
have like a net rating of 12.3 with him than without him. He saved our defense. I mean, we were
Right.
so much better defensively in the second half of the season after once we
Yeah,
got him.
I should probably be clear about this. If I were David Griffin on January 7th of last year, which is the day he made this trade, I would have made the trade too. I just don't have
I think
access to the information that he does.
right, exactly.
Like if I had access, he should have access to the information that told him he could have done this 2 weeks later. And that's his job. His job is to basically have a department that analyzes this as closely as they possibly can and make decisions based on it. Look, I'm not giving him an F for this or anything. I just feel like, yeah, this isn't the home run that he's often credited with.
Right, and then the first round pick. I know people always think of it as this way. It's like, what would you like? What type of player would you pick with that pick? Right, like we don't care about the pick itself, but the
Yeah,
pick
we would
can be
trade
used as
it.
an asset. Exactly,
Yeah.
you can use it in a different trade. So it
Right.
doesn't have to be someone you draft. It could simply be a part of a separate trade.
Yeah, the Cavs cupboard is bereft of picks now, which was a little bit of a problem at the trading deadline. But we'll get to that.
So I think
Okay.
all in all, because Mozgov has declined severely this season, and the fact that they gave up two first round picks, I'd probably give this like a B minus or maybe a B because it did save our season. It was really important at the
Yeah.
time. What would you give it? Maybe like a C?
I was gonna say C or C plus, but
Yeah,
I
I think
totally
that.
understand your thinking, and like, I want to be sure. I want to be clear that like, had I been in the position that I was in on January 7th, I would have made the trade as well. So, it's.
Either way, I think both of us agree that it wasn't the home run that many
Yeah.
people thought this to be.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, go
There's
ahead.
really not a whole lot left. So the Cavs didn't make another move until the draft. They didn't have. Okay, they had a late
They
first round
picked.
pick.
Well, no, but before that, they signed what's his face? Kendrick Perkins.
Oh, right.
But I think that was inconsequential. And it's not
Well,
like they prevented, it's not like they could have signed anyone else, right? I think he was the only option at the time.
I
I mean, I know
well,
you don't like him, but it's not like
I don't like
that
Kendrick
hurt the
Perkins
Cavs.
because I don't think he plays basketball. I mean, look, he used to play basketball okay. Now he doesn't play it. He's terrible. And he goes out there and he acts like a thug, right?
Right,
And I
right.
don't like how he's constantly like, people say that these are like quote unquote hard fouls. These aren't hard fouls. These are dirty plays.
And they're
And
mostly
like,
flagrant fouls.
I don't, yeah, like, I don't like how, like, there's, like, sort of a set of fans out there that are like, oh, I love how, like, we had, like, that muscle under the basket, or, like, we had somebody who would come in and stand up for us. That's not standing up for this. That's, like, making the situation worse.
I think
And
most would
I.
agree that J.R. Smith getting suspended put us in a big pickle in the
Right, yeah, I mean,
Chicago
I've ranted
series, yeah.
about this before, but I'll do it again because it's one of my favorite rants. In game four against Boston, Kelly Olynyk separated Kevin Love's shoulder. Perkins comes in right before halftime. He lays this like ridiculous pick, or it was like a pick or like a shove or something.
It was a pick, and then he shoved him
Yeah,
when
and it
he was
just sort
coming
of
to get
it
over the
just got
pick.
everybody like really sort of chippy and fired up going up and going into halftime. And then in the second half, JR did the sort of weird backwards punch, backwards slap that got him suspended for 2 games. And I'm convinced that if Perkins would not have exacerbated the situation, that J.R. Smith would have played games one and two. Now, look, the Cavs won the series, and they won the next series as well. But like, still, it's
I mean, it
frustrating.
was a bad situation. I mean, Cavs were down 2-1, and if LeBron hadn't made that shot.
Yes, I remember that shot because I was 25 feet away from it, 25 yards, let's say. Let's go on here. All right. So then, the
But I think
draft
we
this
both
year.
agree that at least it wasn't a bad choice. Like,
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not like he
yeah.
hurt us or anything, right?
I was
Well,
fine
he
with it
kind
at
of
the
did in the
time.
playoffs, but
I was fine with it at the time. I
yeah.
didn't have a strong opinion on Kendrick. I had a slight negative opinion on Kendrick Perkins. Now I have a very negative opinion on Kendrick
Right.
Perkins. Yeah,
Then
so then the
nothing
dr
really all
the
throughout the
draft
season.
last year, the Cavs had the 24th pick of the draft,
They
and
traded that, right?
they selected Tyus Jones, and then they
But they
tra
traded.
after then they traded him to the Timberwolves for 2 second round picks. And we've talked about this. So the Cavs
With
ended up with three
three
second
second
round
round
picks.
picks. Yeah,
Yeah,
three
so
second round
they
picks.
had their own second round pick. They picked Sir Dominic Poynter. With the two
Right.
second round picks they got from the Timberwolves for trading their first round pick Tyus Jones for, they got Rakeem Christmas and Seti Osman. Seti Osman is playing in Turkey? He's playing
Yeah,
somewhere
and
in Europe.
he's actually supposed to be one of the best European players,
Yeah,
right? So
people
they have
like
him
him.
stashed there for now.
We have his rights. We have his rights.
Yeah. And we still have them.
Christmas. We traded Rakeem Christmas to the Pacers for a 2019 second round pick. It's actually the Lakers' second round pick in 2019, but whatever. But yeah, I think David Griffin was carefully instructed to pick players that were not going to cap count against the salary cap.
Yeah, I think that's why he
And
traded the first round pick, because
yeah,
it's guaranteed salary, right?
right. And he executed that with optics that did not get the beat reporters writing about that. So good on him. I'm positive that's what happened, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm not positive. I'm like 80% sure that's what happened. Like, I think Dan Gilbert was like, "Look, I'm already like way over the highest payroll in the history of the NBA. Like, our luxury tax bill is going to be ridiculous. Can you like just dump these picks so that we don't have to pay quadruple their salary in luxury tax?" And then a couple other moves that are inconsequential. They traded Joe Harris for cash considerations and a weird second round pick swap. They were just dumping Joe Harris and creating a roster spot. They traded Brendan Haywood and right Mike Miller for second round picks. They were just trying to open up roster spots and save money there.
Oh no, and they were trying to generate the TPEs
Right.
for at least for Brendan
Right,
Haywood
right,
and Mike
right.
Miller. They got two TPEs out of that. But yeah.
Right, right.
Because they
Yeah, I
had
forgot
that
about that.
big Brendan Haywood
Yeah,
contract that was
TPEs are
unguaranteed.
traded player exceptions, and the Cavs have those to use in future trades. So those are mild assets, but.
There's something. It's better than losing Haywood for nothing.
Right. And then, yeah,
So
there's just
so
one.
how would you grade the draft?
I mean, it's odd because they weren't trying to pick up a player to make the roster better this season. They were trying to dump salary, and he did that effectively. Now, perhaps I might argue that I wish he would have argued with. This is unbelievable.
Gilbert?
What's it? Yeah, with Dan Gilbert. Yeah, I'm getting old, man. Perhaps he could have argued with Dan Gilbert and said, like, look, I would like to use this first round pick on somebody who could be an addition, an asset on our roster this season. But, you know, look, picks that late rarely amount to anything, especially on teams that are already contenders. But I'm sort of picking nits here. I'd give him a B plus, I guess.
Yeah, I'd probably give him the same. I mean, whatever he did, he was probably instructed to do. And it's not like he pulled some magic. I mean, it was pretty easy. You just trade your 24th pick for some second round draft pick. So,
right.
Basically, right around average, I would say. Good, nothing bad.
So there are. Okay, so there's two more moves here that he's made, but I think I forgot one. I definitely forgot one.
Which one?
We didn't talk about him signing Anderson Varejão.
Yeah, you're right. When did that happen? That it did happen at some point. It happened in December, if I remember correctly, of the first season that LeBron was back.
I thought the regular season had started.
It had.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, he signed Anderson Varejão to a 4-year extension for about $10 million a year. And, I mean, that deal was bad before it was even signed.
So it was on November 1st of 2014. So basically, a few days after the regular season had started,
right,
they signed him to a 3-year, $30 million extension. And then the fourth year was a non-guaranteed.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, 17, 18 is non-guaranteed. Right. Yeah, so I mean, I love Anderson Varejão. I have two Cavs jerseys in my house. One is Zydrunas Ilgauskas. One is Anderson Varejão. He's, you know, long been a favorite of mine. I enjoy watching him play. I think for much of his career, he was sort of tragically underrated. However, even before the Achilles injury, he was clearly on the downswing, and yeah, that the problem with that deal is that it cost Gilbert so much money in luxury tax, and you know, you might say like, well, the Cavs were over the cap anyway, like they, you know, that they weren't going to be able to spend that money elsewhere. It's like, well, actually, they could spend that money elsewhere. They could spend it on better shooting coaches. They could spend it on better assistant coaches. They could make an offer to, I don't know, we've joked about this in the past, but like, you know, if you said like, look, you know, Greg Popovich, I'll give you $30 million a year if you come and coach us, like, you know, what would he do? So, yeah, I mean, money matters, and this was a colossal waste of money, and good on him for being able to trade him away, as he did, as we'll get into in a minute, but that signing in and of itself, I think I'm not going to give it an F. I think there was some pressure from LeBron and others around the organization to show that they were, like, committed to winning, and, you know, I think there may have been some pressure to make this deal, but he still should not have signed it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I have no emotions involved in this, so... I mean, I like Anderson Varejão as a player, too. And but he had only played 40% of his games the 5 years before he got this contract. So just simply based on that, he should not have gotten this contract. And I think, yeah, I would give it a big F, actually.
Yeah, I mean, for the same reasons that Tristan Thompson's... I'm going to use a word here you're going to argue with, but for the same reason that Tristan Thompson's middling performance is so valuable... Anderson Varejão's middling performance is so bad. Like, Varejão doesn't play many games. You know, this season he's incapable of playing many minutes because they know that he'll get injured and won't be able to play many games. Tristan Thompson hasn't missed a game in, you know, since he was in middle school. And so it's, it makes that sort of middling contribution far, far, far more valuable because it's reliable.
Also, yeah. Just to clarify, he's also much better. Tristan Thompson's also much
Look,
better.
Look, I know. Yeah. I wanted to have an apples-to-apples comparison there so that we could just use the minutes as the variable. But yeah,
because they are kind of similar, at least at the
obviously
beginning of
Tristan
his career, they're similar.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead. So yeah, I think we both agree this was a terrible signing.
Yeah.
Or a terrible extension, at least.
Right. And so... Okay, well, let's look at one more move here. So this move is very recent. On February 18th, the Cavs were... amazingly able, so I'll explain why in a minute, but as part of a three-team trade, the Cleveland Cavaliers traded Anderson Varejão and a 2018 first-round draft pick.
Actually, Keith, before getting into this, should we talk about the signings in the offseason? So, like, the contracts he gave to We can talk about Tristan's contract. I think that's a big one. And then I think Iman Shumpert's contract was the other contentious one. I think he handled J.R. Smith's
We
and
probably should.
Delly's pretty well.
Okay, yeah, so let's go over this. So reportedly, Delly had asked the Cavs for, I think, $6 million.
I think, I think it was more than what he got, obviously, but yeah, it was a little too much for them.
And he was a restricted free agent, or was he?
He was a restricted free agent,
Yeah, so he was unable to get an offer from any other team. The Cavs signed him to a one-year
For the
deal.
qualifying offer, yeah.
Yeah, for the qualifying offer. Which is the lowest they could possibly give to him. The good news about this is that he will remain a restricted free agent after
Because
this
of how
season.
restricted rights apply to second
Right.
round picks.
Correct. So
Or
just
because
as
to undrafted free agents, but yeah.
just as a reminder, restricted free agents can go out and get an offer from any team, but the Cavs are allowed to match. And that gives them the power to basically say, like, hey man, go out and figure out what you're worth, and then we'll either match, or you can, take an offer that we give you preemptively. So anyway, yeah, that deal was genius, A plus.
But here's a counter argument, right? Now Delly's playing much better, so do you think they'll have to give him more than they would have if they had signed him to a longer term contract last year?
Yes, but I didn't think Delly was a serviceable NBA player. I know everyone loved him after the finals, but the reality is, like, he was not a very good player last year. He was, just not very good. And so, if the Cavs would have signed him to like a guaranteed 3-year deal, I would have been sort of apoplectic. I would have been, what are they doing? This is insane. If they could have gotten him for 3 years, 2 million, or th six
2
million
million per
total,
year,
to,
but
yeah,
yeah.
2 million per year, like, sure, fine. But like, I don't think Delly would have done that, and that would have
So I
required
think,
some serious
go
prescience
ahead.
from the Cavs to
Yeah, I think this is
anticipate
one of
that.
those process over results things. So if they had signed him to like, I don't know, 3 year, 12 million or something, they probably would have been better off in the long term because of how good he's become. But I think the idea was that he wasn't that good last year, so it
Right.
would have the thinking process would have been off.
Yeah, they didn't have the information we've had after 70
Right.
games of an NBA season where Delly has molded himself into to the 15th best point guard in the NBA by RPM. Like, they just didn't, that wasn't that wasn't known. So
So
anyway,
yeah,
yeah,
I
like
think I agree with that.
negotiating his contract this offseason is going to be tricky, but something to
But
watch.
he's restricted again, so that should
Right.
at least help.
Right.
And then J.R. Smith, he opted out.
Right.
He had a player option.
Yeah, J.R. Smith had a player option for, boy, I don't remember. Was it 6 million?
Six 6.5, something like that. It was six, I think.
I think the reason why I think it was more than six is because,
I can look it up.
wait, hold on. No, you're right. I think it was for 6.5 because he was paid 6.5 the year before. So I think it was 6.5, and he turned that down. He declined that option, and he was an unrestricted free agent. But as far as we know, nobody offered him any deal.
He claimed he got some offers. But
Yeah.
he at least he claimed that in an interview. I remember this specifically. But yeah, nothing was reported at all.
Right. And then the Cavs signed him to a 1-year deal for $5 million, with a $5 million player option. So if J.R. Smith wants to stay for $5 million, he will play for us next year. If he wants to test free agency again, he can not exercise his option, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent, and we'll have the same game we had last offseason with him.
So the one thing about him, though, about his contract, is that even if he picks his player option next season, the Cavs are only on hook for 2 million, if I remember correctly. So his contract was really weird. I remember they only guaranteed 2 million, and the next 3 million he would get based on bonuses and other incentives. I
Okay.
remember, yeah. But anyway, and another interesting development for his contract is that he recently switched agents. So now he finally signed Rich Paul. So now we have
Oh,
three players.
wonderful.
So
Great.
we have J.R. Smith on Rich Paul. We have LeBron and Tristan Thompson.
Yeah. We've been going for a while here, and
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about the Tristan Thompson thing, but I think we should save that for another podcast because I know you and I sort of disagree on that, and I think it's a pretty juicy subject that we should give more than 5 minutes to.
Okay, I agree,
But
yeah.
let's just mention it in brief. So Tristan Thompson was a restricted free agent last offseason. The Cavs signed him to a 5-year, $83 million deal, It's a topic of much hand-wringing and consternation by people around the NBA. Some people think it was too much. Some people it's exactly what he deserved given the market situation. But in any case, the Cavs now have Tristan Thompson for 5 years with an $83 million deal, which, because of the cap going up next year, will probably be team-friendly starting next season. But is that enough said on that for now?
Yeah, I think that's.
Okay, all right. We'll address that in
Yeah, I think we can
maybe
get
in the off season
into
or
firing and the
sometime next
fry.
week. Yeah, all right. So the last two things are firing David Blatt and hiring Tyronn Lue.
Then the Channing Frye trade. But yeah.
Right, and the Channing Frye trade. So, look, I don't know what to think about firing David Blatt. I remember, I think we did one of our first podcasts right after.
It was our first podcast, yeah.
Yeah, right after that happened. I didn't know what to make of it then. I still don't know what to make of it now. The Cavs' record is worse. Their SRS is about the same. Some of the dysfunction things don't really seem to have been smoothed over. Some things that I didn't like about LeBron's interactions with David Blatt are gone with Tyronn Lue. I feel like LeBron, at least optically to my eyes, and maybe I just have, selection bias here, I feel like LeBron respects him a little bit more. But in any case, the results have not been changed much. But you mentioned you want to see what happens in the playoffs before sort of making a full decision on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cavs have been much better. We talked about it last podcast, but Cavs have been much better offensively, and they've been much worse defensively. But the net effect has been basically the same.
Yeah.
The winning percentage is lower now because they lost tonight. But it's I think that's less important than the net rating to me. So they've basically been the same team as they were under David Blatt. The only difference is that they've actually beaten some good teams now. So they finally beat Chicago. They finally beat the Spurs. They finally beat. Well, they beat Oklahoma City under Blatt too, but yeah, they finally beat the
Yeah.
Spurs. I think that was the big win that they got under Tyronn Lue that everyone was really happy about.
I agree. Yeah, I Look, if I were forced, gun to my head, to like make a verdict on that move right now, I would say C. Like, I still think that David Blatt has more upside than Tyronn Lue does. Like, Blatt is sort of by reputation sort of a basketball genius. Now, I don't feel like we really saw that here. In fact, we saw some serious basketball blunders by him.
Right.
I think Kyrie Irving has more upside than Matthew Dellavedova, even though Dellavedova is playing better. I think David Blatt has more upside than Tyronn Lue, even though,
We're about the
well,
same.
yeah, maybe the analogy ends there. So yeah, I just don't know. Fortunately, neither us nor the Cavs need to make a decision on that right now. We're going to go with Lue into the playoffs and see what happens. But like I mentioned before we started recording, if I perceive David, if sorry, if I perceive Tyronn Lue is coaching badly in the playoffs and he's not let go, I'll be upset. But I don't think either of those things will happen. I think he'll coach so-so, or it won't visibly be coaching, and I think the Cavs will lose in the conference finals or the finals, and so it'll be like, well, who are you going to get that's better? And we're going to have all this hand-wringing in the off-season.
Right. So I think for me, I'm pretty much at a B, which is where I was even when the signing happened. I don't think I've changed my mind on it. I think the reasoning for firing Blatt was fine. I think we
Me
weren't.
too.
I think the reason was perfectly fine. Now, hiring Tyronn Lue, I'm not sure about that. I think it's fine. I think he was fine as an interim. I'm not sure why they gave him a 2-year contract. We can maybe discuss that, but that was the only iffy part of that deal to me. And whether they actually gave him that 2-year contract, because apparently it was reported, and then David Griffin said that that never actually happened, so no one really knows so far. But they did. It was reported by Woj, I think, that he got a long-term contract from the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't count against the cap or anything, but it's money out the door that could have been
But
spent on.
how many coaches are they going to have on the payroll, right? I think they're still paying Mike or what's his face,
Brown?
none of the other guy from the Lakers.
Byron Scott?
Byron Scott, yeah. Aren't they still paying Scott? And now they're paying Blatt. I think they
Yeah.
finished Brown this
Yeah,
season.
no. They gave those guys, long-term deals, and I think when you get fired, there's like a. Well, it depends. It's contractual. It depends. But yeah, as much as people like to imagine that Dan Gilbert, oh, I got it, yes. As much as people like to imagine that Dan Gilbert has infinite money, he just doesn't. And yeah, like any dollar out the door on one thing is something that's not spent on the other. If he had infinite money, like, the Cavs would have a private Concorde that flew between,
Well,
every place they
Concords have
played.
their own issue because of the sonic boom and then the fact
Yeah,
that it actually burned. But anyway,
there's some risk of your players dying on it, and that would be bad.
yeah,
So yeah, maybe that's why they don't do that. But in any case, you understand my point. Like,
yeah, no,
he
I do, I
doesn't
do.
have infinite money. There are things you can spend money on that he doesn't. And so yeah, any money out the door is bad. Okay, all right. So that's Blatt Lou. So then the last thing is
The Channing
the
Frye
Cavs.
Anderson.
Yeah, the Channing Frye trade. So they traded Anderson Varejao. I'm going to read it here because it's a little bit complicated. As part of a three-team trade, the Cleveland Cavaliers traded Anderson Varejao in a 2018 first-round pick to the Portland Trail Blazers. The Cleveland Cavaliers traded Jarrett Cunningham to the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic traded Channing Frye to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Portland Trail Blazers traded a 2016 second-round pick to the Orlando Magic. The first-round pick from Cleveland, which is their 2018 first-round pick, to Portland is top 10 protected in 2018 and 2019. If that pick is in the top 10 in 2018 or 2019, the Cavs have other problems. So, yeah, they traded Anderson Varejao and hopefully a mid-20s pick for Channing Frye. And
Well, they also traded Jared Cunningham, but he was
right, my
inconsequential.
favorite music aficionado, Jarrett Cunningham. Yeah, so they traded him as well. But I mean, really, I think you can think of it as basically doing a salary dump on Anderson Varejao and getting Channing Frye. Frye is paid around the same, I think.
8.5 million, if I remember.
Yeah, so a little bit less. Okay, so the Cavs were able to make that trade because the Portland Trail Blazers were below the salary floor. In the NBA, if you're below the salary floor, there is some incentive to get above it. I don't remember exactly what it is, but the Trail Blazers wanted to get above it.
I think the incentive is that if you're below, you have to split the money amongst your players.
Right,
So you have to get to the floor, but yeah.
but if you're above, you have to pay it anyway, so why not split it amongst your players and make
Yeah, I
them
mean,
happy?
there's no incentive, quote unquote, because that money goes away anyway.
Yeah. Is that a
I
way to
guess.
pay somebody more than the max, by the way?
Yeah, I guess so, right?
We could be like, LeBron, we're going to sign you and like all minimum free agents, and then we're going to give you the difference between the salary. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Okay, well, anyway. So yeah, the Cavs made that trade. Channing Frye has been terrible the last two games, but up until then, outstanding. In fact, I looked this up the other day, and unfortunately, it hasn't been updated since Monday. But Channing Frye is now the fourth best power forward in the NBA by real plus minus, which is pretty good.
And to be fair, that's not simply based on his hot play recently. He's always been very good by RPM.
Right. Yes, he has. So yeah, I love that trade. I was sorry to see Andy go. So there's some bittersweetness there, but look, as David Griffin always says, we're here to win. And everything is for that objective, and so yeah, that's why they did it. And yeah, the early returns are good. I would like to see Frye play more minutes.
Yeah, I think he should definitely get way more minutes than
Yeah,
he's getting right now.
less for Mozgov, more for Frye.
Right. So, what would you give this?
I guess I would give that an A minus, just because I don't know what else was available out there. But
Yeah, I would probably do the same. A minus, because basically he gave up only that first round pick.
right.
And
Right.
yeah, if he hadn't given that first round pick and simply just gotten Channing Frye, then it would have been like an A plus plus. But
Right.
yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. So that's basically okay. That was a lot longer than I thought it would be, but yeah, that was a synopsis of sort of the moves that Griffin has made. I don't know.
Where do you stand on him?
I don't know. Look, he got LeBron James. He appears to have kept LeBron James, although he's, LeBron's doing these 1-year contract things, but I don't think LeBron's going anywhere. So that alone, being able to do that and not irritate LeBron to the point of leaving is a big win. I am not sure the chemistry between Irving, Love, and James. Chemistry is not the right word. It's sort of the right word, but yeah, a better word is synergy. Like, I'm not sure those
On-court
guys is.
synergy or
Yeah,
just off?
on court.
Okay,
Well,
I
I mean,
agree.
I think those things are somewhat related, but definitely their on-court synergy is a little bit lacking. Now, I don't think that was clear coming into this season, so I don't blame him for not making a move before the season. But let's say the Cavs lose in the conference finals, okay? And Kyrie Irving plays sort of similar throughout the playoffs as he has been for the last month.
Is everyone healthy?
Everyone's healthy.
Okay.
I mean, I think Irving's value is higher than Love. I think that is not correct. I think Love is a better player. I think he should look to, I will begin to advocate that he should trade Kyrie Irving. Now, look, I'm not advocating for that now. We have a lot of basketball left to be played before they need to make that decision. But if he sits on the Irving, Love, LeBron trio and, you know, isn't able to, like, add a significant piece, I will be disappointed because I don't think that will be enough to get past the Spurs or the Warriors. I think both Kawhi and Steph and Draymond are going to get better, not worse.
Yeah, I think one thing, though, in fairness to Kyrie, he's, and to Love, I guess, they both spent their last offseason rehabbing. So they didn't really get the entire offseason to improve. Now, if Irving can stay healthy all throughout the playoffs and at least be okay, I mean, of course, if he has a true shooting percentage of 40, then yeah, I think you have to think about trading him. But if he's at least okay, and the reason they lose is because of better play by Toronto, I think you would give him another year before you decide to trade him. And of course, it depends on what you can get for him, right? Like, if we can get Chris Paul for him, sure, I would go for that trade. But if you're getting, I don't know, some complimentary pieces or some good role players, that still wouldn't put you over the Warriors, right? So then why go for that? Why not just wait for Irving to get better?
Well,
because Irving definitely has a high ceiling. I think we both agree on
yeah,
that.
I mean, look, I don't know how we don't have time to get into this now, but
right.
Look, Irving's RPM is negative 0.67. If he can get a 3 RPM player, he might have to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on like how much
right.
how much of the regression you think is because of the fact that he couldn't
get
spend
to
the
play all season. Yeah, I mean, ideally he has people that are sort of analyzing that and making decisions about that. I don't know, and we don't need to decide yet. I'm just saying
right.
that, you know.
No, I agree. I think something
could
to
be
think
a situation.
About going
yeah, it's yeah. something to think about going forward. Anyway, did you want to add anything else?
No, I think that. So yeah, overall, B. B
overall,
plus.
I'm not giving him a B plus. I'm gonna say B minus or C plus. I don't like grade inflation, right? Like I want the mean to be right at C plus, B minus, and I think he's been right around the mean. I think he's been average.
Okay. Yeah. So average for me is a B. But yeah. So yeah, I'd give him about it. Maybe a little above average. I think he did a very good job retooling, especially when we needed it badly. But yeah, other than that, I don't think he's made any other amazing trades so far.
Yeah.
So maybe a little above average for me.
Yeah. We're arguing around the details here. I think we agree in the main.
Not a home run, but definitely not like Chris Grant.
Right.
Bad.
Right. Exactly. All right. So this has been episode 11 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. And go Cavs. Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Cavalytics, a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I'm going to go through the spiel here. We're available on both SoundCloud and iTunes, and we would appreciate likes and good ratings there if you enjoy what we're doing. You can follow us on Twitter at CavaliticsNBA, and you can email us at CavaliticsNBA at